But, and also, please, if you don't have any proper names, just in case we drop this.
Okay.
Confidentiality is just important. So can you tell me a little bit about what you did with the call center?
There are a number of call centers in social services outside of New York State. Mm-hmm. I don't believe there are any other than the one we're currently doing, though there may be one in New York City. I'm not sure about that. Mm-hmm. We saw the call center as a way of doing business different than we have in the past. And I think the reason that this became important to us was specifically to the area of food stamps. Caseloads were increasing. Staffing levels remained the same. How do you handle bigger volume of work more efficiently? One of the issues with in a caseload-based system, which is what most people use, what we had prior to this, was that for one thing, calls would come in, they'd go to the worker, and workers having lots of different things to do wouldn't necessarily get to that phone call right away, which would mean then that the client leaves a message. Lots of times they call back 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes later because their phone call hasn't been returned, and then they may call back a third time, they may call the supervisor. Meanwhile, the worker's been doing other things. They finally get around to it. Now they have to listen to all those messages and try to call the client back, don't get a hold of them, play phone tag. It's very, very inefficient. So we saw the idea of a call center as a way to be more efficient, a way to provide better customer service, and a way to use our staff better. Because in a caseload-based system, the worker's responsible for everything. They're responsible for being a phone person. They have to take phone calls. They have to do all their daily work. They have to do recertifications. They have to do everything. Well, staff, being as they may, are better at certain things. Some people are much better on the phone. Some people are much better just doing paperwork. So we also saw it as a chance to put people in areas that they are better suited for their personalities or whatever. So we first started talking about this in, I think I met with the food stamp staff in October of 2006, and we spent the next year plus trying to get this together. We did have some phone conferences with other states and counties who have call centers. One was Milwaukee County, which I can't say where we were overly impressed with. They had some issues, I think. There was very long waits for their call center. The state of Washington, I was personally very impressed with. We had an afternoon phone conference with them, and they gave us a lot of good information. And we used a lot of some of their ideas anyways, in putting this together. Yeah. We were fortunate enough, I think, to have a good basis for this ahead of time with a software app that was developed internally. So I'm going to digress a little bit here. The system that we use to authorize benefits is through WMS, Welfare Management System. It's a state mainframe system that goes back to, I think it was designed in the late 70s. We've been on it since the early 80s. And it's a system where the way it's supposed to work is that a worker has a data entry form, fills it out, it gets sent someplace, a data entry person then keys this information in, it's reviewed by a supervisor, then it's data entered, and then the next day a benefit is produced for a client. About 15 years or so ago, we said that this is a problem for us because our data entry work was getting stacked up. So we'd have piles of stuff in data entry. The worker had done everything they could, and we have clients without benefits. So the clients are calling everybody in the world, screaming at people, and it's a data entry problem. We said, okay, what we would like to do is we would like to take over the data entry function so we don't have this data entry problem. The worker does the work, they just key it in, it's gone. We got that approved. We were the first county to do that. Took a little getting used to for a number of people, both internally and externally, but we were able to amazingly pull it off, I think, and looking back.
Mostly accountants.
Yes.
So the data entry into the WMS used to be done somewhere else.
Yes.
You have to send the actual physical paper.
Yeah.
To a different floor. To a different floor. Okay. Building or anything.
So you cut out that middle step.
Yeah. And see, one of the biggest problems is I do the work. I think it's right. Mm-hmm. Now it goes through this chain of number of people. It goes up there. They key it in. And it blinks at them. Says, you got an error. They detach the error report. Comes back down through. And we do everything over again. If you get it wrong the second time, the same thing happens. So you get in this big loop where you don't have that mm-hmm. feedback that says, oh yeah, something's wrong. And sometimes it could have even been a key punch error on their part. Mm-hmm. And so it just caused a number of problems. We said, if we can do it ourselves, one of the things is we can fix the error right away. We'll get that instant feedback that something is wrong. We can look at it and say, oh yeah, I didn't want that to be a 97 or 93. I wanted it to be a 97. And take care of it that way.
And who is we? Is that food stamps? Or
it was the temporary assistance division is made up of food stamps and temporary assistance. So when I say we, I'm generally talking about mm-hmm. both.
But there was also Medicaid was involved at this point, you know, the whole agency really.
Yeah, all the non-services programs.
Food service, family assistance, Medicaid. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we've had that now for 15 years where we've done the direct data entry ourselves. A couple years ago, in looking at this, we said, wait a minute, if we're doing the data entry ourselves, why do we need this data entry form? Why am I keying something and then filling it in on a piece of paper or vice versa? Why am I doing double work here? The filled out data entry form was an authorization form. It had to have a signature on it, and that was stored in accounting. But it was like, why do I have to have this data entry form as that? And then it produces another data entry form, which just comes back, and the worker has to file in a case. So we'd get stacks of these that we'd have to deal with on a daily basis. So there was the double work of keying and writing stuff in, and then there was the moving these forms back and forth and storing them and like that. So we said, we don't want to do this anymore.
So very middle 70s to 80s design with, you know, when people would have just been working with a paper. Mm-hmm. And this is a turnaround document. You do your work on it, and then you get back a thing that says, yep, what you did happened. Mm-hmm. And that's what it made perfect sense 25 years ago.
Gotcha.
Not so much anymore.
Yeah, because now you could just look on the computer.
Right. Well, everybody has their own computer, and mm-hmm. you know, it's just a different world.
Yeah, mm-hmm. just totally different. I mean, way back when we first started doing this, there was like, you know, a few terminals on the floor. You had to get up from your desk and go to a terminal to look at anything or do anything. So it's just everybody's got a PC now. They have access to everything. It's just changed. Mm-hmm. So we put in for a waiver, and only took about a year, but we got it. As far as I know, we're still the only county that has that waiver. So we don't have
New York State waiver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But at the time, this actually was not totally received wonderfully by our staff. They said, well, you know, I kind of like that document because it kind of gives me a picture of what's going on in the case right there. Geez, what happens if WMS is down or something? I can just kind of look at this. So we said, okay, how about... And Dave here designed a system which we call the 3209 app, which took from WMS, some information from WMS and from other places, and put it together in an easy-to-use application where, 'cause WMS is not really user-friendly. And so now we've got a more user-friendly app. And the only reason we did this at the time was to help the staff negotiate this change of not having this document anymore. And
what they asked for was an image, essentially, of this document that they could call up on a screen. That was the assignment.
Yeah.
And it would look pretty much the same.
It would have all the same information, the same places, at least. You know?
So
I wasn't satisfied.
Yeah, Dave did a much better job, and the staff was very, very happy, and they continue to make suggestions and changes to this. And just even little things like, instead of putting down where on the 3209 you'd have a code there, specifically, I'll give a good example, the vendor ID, which is a bunch of numbers for the most part. So if I look at this and it's 011025, does that mean anything to me? No. But Dave linked the vendor ID to the name, so now on there it shows the name that this is XYZ landlord. So just little nice things like that. And incorporate a number of nice things. For instance, if you click on the social security number of the individual, it shows you all the cases that that individual is in. And you can actually go to those other cases just by clicks, where you can't really do that in WMS. It's a much more cumbersome process to do that. So with this 3209 app, this has been the basis of our further innovation. When we talked about going to a call-based or a task-based system, which the call center is part of, we said there's two things we need that we didn't have at the time. One is we need a new phone system. We can't do it with the existing phone system. We have to have a phone system that can give us more information. And the second thing is we have to be able to route a task. Because before, if a piece of paper came in, we just said, oh, this is worker A's caseload, or it's on worker A's caseload, we just give them the piece of paper, landlord form, whatever, and they would take care of it. Now what happens is we have one big caseload, but we have a number of workers doing different things. So one of the tasks is, or one of the groups is a daily work task. So when the information comes in now, we have to assign it to somebody. So we needed a software application that would help us assign stuff. And again, Dave developed something for us that allows us to assign work. So all we do is, and it's attached to the 3209 application, so if we could go in, typically it might be something like this, a piece of paper comes in, they find out, identify which case it is, it's for, you know, case number XYZ. So going in there, then they can assign a task, and they can put down, they would put down things like, you know, what the task is. There's like a general broad category of tasks, and then they could, then there's a spot for narration that they could fill in more information if necessary. And then by doing that, then in clicking OK, they basically assign the task to any of the workers in a round robin who are in that group that day. Which changes from day to day because we have to shift people around based on things like it's the first week of the month and it's the first Monday of the first week. Our call volume is historically much higher that day. We put more people on the phones. Less people are then available to do other things. So we kind of change things around like that. So this software application allows us to do that. And one of the advantages to this over what we had in the past was if you'd come in here 3 months ago and said to me, how much work do you have out there? What stuff is out there? What hasn't been done and what has been done? I can say, I have absolutely no idea. I can tell you maybe how many recertifications have been done, how many of those are outstanding, but how many pieces of paper are out there that need action, I have absolutely no idea. Now, every piece of paper comes in. Everything is assigned a task. Each task has its own individual number. So we can go in there and look and say, yep, we got this many tasks that have been assigned that haven't been completed yet. And, yep, we have this many tasks that have been assigned that haven't been completed that are 3 weeks old. So we have all this information now that we never had before. So that gives us a chance to put the resources in the areas that need it. We can say, oh, you know, phone calls are down today, but geez, we're getting a lot of daily work, so therefore maybe we can move, for the time being, we can move a phone person to daily work. We can do a number of things like that. And we've only been in this now for a little less than 2 months. While we have some issues, I think that overall it's been a really good thing. I think most of the staff, I should say we're doing this both for food stamps and temporary assistance. It's going better on the food stamp side than on the temporary assistance side. I think the food stamp staff were looking forward to it much more. They kept asking when it was going to happen because they were getting more and more cases. Their caseload was going up, and they didn't feel that they were able to handle the workload. Mm-hmm. And now I think that for the most part, most of them feel it's a much better system. Mm-hmm.
And is it wasn't the same with temporary assistance where the caseload's going up?
No, the caseload's been actually going down for the most part. Mm-hmm. I think they felt more comfortable in the existing business model, and that they're having a little tougher time moving over to the new model. Not all of them. The phone people seem to like it. The research people seem to like it. It seems mostly that the daily work people are struggling with this a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So now, are these all developed in a specific platform like Oracle or Access? Or
I use Visual Fax Pro.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And some of the data is SQL data. Mm-hmm. We have the data that goes into WMS. Mm-hmm. We get back each day, and that's stored in an SQL database. Mm-hmm. That we call SOS. Everything else is in local Visual Fox Pro tables.
Okay. And that's sort of like a relational database structure.
Yeah, it's like grown-up Access.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Sort of more industrial.
Yeah, it's it's more like using, say, Visual Basic plus a back-end database. It's got both. Mm-hmm. Pieces to it. It's a data aware development language.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. This is what I was looking to learn about. They were very happy about this upstairs. Now, this has helped to reassign. I remember the commissioner David was talking about how he, you know, an important thing for him was some things are more interpersonal, more in. Effort intensive. For instance, he was talking about temporary assistance is taking a lot of work because you're trying to affect a behavioral change. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things about moving toward this type of strategy is it would let you sort of reallocate people, you know, or at least save people on things that are sort of like Medicaid where there isn't much leeway or discretion. And so is that sort of...
We're just into it, so it's kind of tough to say that for sure, but I think that it has accomplished one of our goals, which was, like I said, food stamps, which the caseloads are going up. We think that it's helping in that area for sure, so we're able to do more with less, or at least more with the same, I should say. And people seem happier with it in that regard. You know, when you have a caseload, you're so focused in on that. So if somebody comes and dumps 10 more cases on your desk, it's like, oh, I got more work to do. Mm-hmm. In this, where it's one big caseload and you're only assigned tasks, it doesn't bother people as much. Mm-hmm. So, yes, if you get overwhelmed on tasks, you're still going to have a problem. But we haven't seen that. And we think that it's going to help in that regard. I definitely, from a customer service, it's much better. Mm-hmm. We see, you never have to come down here. For food stamps, you almost never, ever, ever have to come down to the Civic Center. We do 2/3 of our initial applications by phone and mail. Mm-hmm. So it's only 1/3 of the people actually do come in here to apply, and they wouldn't have to for the most part if they didn't want to. Mm-hmm. After that, we do all our recertifications by phone and by mail. And with the call center, you can get service by calling. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, we even changed it. So it used to be that if you came in here, you saw a worker. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be your worker, but we had some pre-screeners. And we did away with those and said, if you come down here and you got an issue, there's some phones on the wall. Call the call center. Mm-hmm. They can take care of you. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, with the call center, our average wait time is about a minute and a half, mm-hmm. between a minute and a half and 2 minutes, which anybody who's called Dell lately would be very happy with that kind of wait time.
Or 2 months ago, if you came in and had to see your worker.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a minute and a half would be if they just happened to be there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Normally, it could be, you know, if they're at lunch.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we think, from what we've heard from external sources, is that most people are pretty happy with this. And, I think the clients were, like, astounded the first time they called and got, you know, they got through. We had some issues at first with call volume and like that. But when they got through and the person said, I can help you, you know, I can take care of you, and they were like, oh, really?
They must have the wrong number.
Between 85 and 90% of the phone calls we get are handled by the call center worker without passing anything along.
Mm-hmm. And this is all possible because of this application. They can pull up anything, or would this be possible if it was still, if you're still relying on the WMS?
It's possible.
Yeah. It would be a lot more cumbersome. Mm-hmm. The assignment WMS wouldn't handle that. It doesn't have any function for that. Mm-hmm. It would have to be like some manual log or something.
Yeah.
How the person would be notified that they had something assigned to them, I don't know what. You know, you'd have to have runners going.
Right, right.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, anything's possible with enough people and staff, you know, jumping at it. But, I mean, it would be much more difficult, I think.
I mean, we pretty much said right from the start that we had to have a routing system and a better phone system. Those are the things that we had to have in order to do this.
Right.
mm-hmm. 3209 screen as opposed to the actual routing system, you probably could get there from WMS, you know, but it wouldn't be anywhere near as easy. And the routing system would be integrated, where now you're in this 3209 screen, you can search a bunch of different ways pretty quickly, and then you just click the right button and it comes up and assign one thing. You just click a couple of things and it's assigned. You know? Or that would be a little. You'd have to look at WMS, get the information, come over here, create a record, a whole record, where now I'm just porting the information from one thing to another. So, while it's possible, it wouldn't be. They wouldn't like it. They wouldn't have bought into it. They wouldn't have done it, probably.
And does it crash much? And from experience, from what I've run into people, especially if they're making sort of a database for a large operation like this on Access, Microsoft Access, that seems to
Access
be unable
is ridiculous.
To,
I mean, there's no way I would attempt this in Access.
Yeah. Even if it can make the same thing, it seems like the speed.
Yeah.
And
once you get over 10 or 12 people in an Access database, Foxpro is more like, you know, it's a development tool. It's not an end user database, really. And the only problem we had was they requested some changes, which I made over the weekend, and because I was doing it from home, I only had my administrative sign-on, so I couldn't test everything just right, and I ended up restricting access to the table where they assign the tasks so that they couldn't really, they could go through the whole process, and then when it came time to assign the task, the table wouldn't update.
Right, right.
So that knocked us back for a couple hours. But that's the only
glitch
thing that I would call a crash.
I anticipate those. Yeah, I would say that a crash. But so with this, you can write new queries that are requested. I mean, for instance, the one you mentioned earlier, it seemed was, you know, how many things are outstanding, waiting to be done.
Yeah. Now, we don't have a reporting component built into this system yet. But what Dave does is he gives us the raw data, and we're able to go in, we use Access or whatever to do some queries and whatever.
Figure once they do that a while, they'll figure out what reports they really want, and then I can build them into, you know.
Rather than build.
Yeah.
No, this works. Build them and then rebuild them and then rebuild them. Let them do all the rebuilding. And they'd all rather do that than their jobs anyway. So
that's
everybody
that's
likes
sure.
the data stuff.
Yeah. Great. Are there things that I'm missing? I mean, it would be neat. I don't know if it's possible to sort of just get a glance at what the system looks like.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of refurbishing a course to incorporate entrepreneurial. You missed sort of the earlier, we were talking about innovation in the human services, but social entrepreneurship in general as well. And part of the course that this goes into is a human service case management course, which involves database construction. So it would be sort of helpful just to see what it looks like. But are there things that I'm missing that it would be helpful for students to know about as far as innovations in technology in the human services?
Well, I think the most important thing is to be in an environment that allows you to do it. That's the first thing. I mean, we have proposed a number of things that have been outside the box over time, and first of all, we were able to do it because internally we had an environment that allowed us to do it, sometimes begrudgingly, but for the most part, they've been all for it. And then, you know, we've gotten the waivers from the state to do it. Without that, we couldn't go anyplace. And then I think the other thing, internally, what you need then, are you need people that are willing to take chances, that can come up with ideas that are different, or maybe not so much different in that there aren't other people doing them, but be able to take them from other places and whatever and say, hey, look, I think this is a good idea. I think this is a direction we should go in. And then I know personally that without the support of systems, and Dave in particular, that we would have really struggled with a lot of this stuff. So I think it's been a good partnership, I can say, at least with my division. I can't speak for all the divisions, but I can speak for the TA division, and we've had a great partnership with systems over time and worked very well together, and because of that, all this stuff has happened. Mm-hmm. I don't think that much of this stuff would have happened without that partnership, because you got to have somebody to do it. You know, we can come up with the ideas, but you got to have somebody available to do it, and it always scares me. I keep hearing, you know, well, we think that... maybe not here, but you know, the idea of like outsourcing IT functions or whatever. The farther away you take those functions from the people that really need them, the less of the partnership you're going to have, and the less you're going to have. You know, we get really good service this way, and it's not just this. Here's a canned application. You know, take your business practices and fit them into this program. It's, okay, let's work on this, and what's doable and what's not doable, and everything we've done here, we're on, you know, version 10.10 or something, because we're constantly making suggestions, and in working with Dave, and he said, well, this doesn't work, but how about this, and coming up with a product then that meets everybody's needs. And it's doable, and, you know, not just this, yeah, well, you can do this, this, and this, and yeah, I can do it for you, and you can have it in, you know, 2010. So we get kind of things when we need them.
So, actually, I should have asked this earlier. So you're the head of temporary systems, and you're the head of systems?
No, not the head, but
you're in systems.
Sort of the main developer.
Gotcha. All right.
The part of it is just they haven't been here forever. Like when they came to me with the 3209 screen, I gave them back lots of things they didn't ask for because I knew what they needed. They didn't even think to ask for stuff that I thought, well, this would be cool. You know, they could probably use this. You know, and they end up it ends up being a, you know, one of the bigger parts of it. You know, through our imaging system, we had this little homegrown imaging system, and so that became part of the 3209 screen, and filling out forms and PDFs mm-hmm. you know, filling in out with data that's in the case record. And none of these were part of the original assignment, but because I was here, mm-hmm. I knew that this is what they needed. I wasn't mm-hmm. just, you know, an expert from out of town that mm-hmm. comes in mm-hmm. and has to start mm-hmm. from ground zero and ask yeah. questions. Yeah. And I only know what mm-hmm. the seven people that were put on the task force tell me, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
And so yeah. imaging...
I was gonna say, and I definitely think that one of the big pluses, and I've over time for sure, has been having a programmer... that a systems person that knows our programs mm-hmm. and having program people that know a little bit about systems. So mm-hmm. we're able to talk the same language. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a key because if you have people that don't understand how systems work to some extent, then they can just, they have no idea what goes behind some of the stuff. So they're either going to mm-hmm. not know what's possible or expect the world mm-hmm. and not be able to get it. And having a systems person that knows some of the program, like Dave said, being able to put stuff in before even people suggested it because he knew what people would want was mm-hmm. is a huge mm-hmm. thing.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, we tend not to have... We don't have anybody in our systems office who comes out of a traditional systems education, let's say. Mm-hmm. Nobody went to school to study IT or anything mm-hmm. like that. They're all people who worked here. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to, you know, I'll take anybody with a three-digit IQ who knows a program area mm-hmm. and you can teach them how to code.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. it's better that they have the native skills and the experience in the agency, mm-hmm. have an idea of what's going on out here. Mm-hmm. They got to have the IQ, you know, they old mm-hmm. thing, you can't teach height, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But once you've got that, you know, the rest of it is mm-hmm. more experience than anything mm-hmm. else.
Do you internally train people, or do you send people out to training courses?
We just show people, basically. I mean, mm-hmm. we've been to some external training, mm-hmm. But... for the most part, it's just homegrown stuff. Mm-hmm.
It was impressive to me that you were saying that you give them the data, and they'll people who work in your division will use Access and, you know, query and
yeah. Well, and we've like had that, training, you know, in Access yeah, yeah. and Excel yeah. and Word mm-hmm. and such. You know, mm-hmm. and OCC.
It's not everybody. It's mm-hmm. it's a few of us mostly, mm-hmm. but
it's people who have an interest yeah. will mm-hmm. learn how to use this yeah. stuff. I mm-hmm. mean, you know, people figure it out. Mm-hmm.
And once people kind of get their feet wet in it a little bit, it just whets their appetite more mm-hmm. for it and like that. So I have some administrators now who I, you know, don't know that much about this. We're starting to get into a couple other database things mm-hmm. that we do mm-hmm. and starting to develop their own way of doing it and getting their information and like that mm-hmm. rather than, you know... asking me or then asking Dave. And I think I'm hoping that one of the pluses have been over time is that Dave gives us the data and we're able to do our own queries, which saves him the time to do the development of other things instead of mm-hmm. in the old days where we didn't have access to information. I'd be bugging him about, geez, can I get this report or can I get that report? And that's not a good use of his time. Where here, if you give the data and you get it to the people that can use it, then they can do their own stuff, and then he can develop the stuff that we can't do, like mm-hmm. these apps.
This SOS database I mentioned earlier, which is the SQL database of all the stuff that, not all, most of the stuff that we put into the state system comes mm-hmm. back to us mm-hmm. and is available. There's a reporting tool called Cognos that... it's a database catalog and report creator kind of, and it's we use it as, and we're using it as an end user tool. Mm-hmm. So Steve has been to some classes and some of the folks on his staff and from other parts of the department. So there's a lot of data in there, mm-hmm. and there's a woman on my staff who is a teacher by mm-hmm. trade, mm-hmm. and she teaches all kinds of software stuff, and she's been mm-hmm. kind of guiding. I don't teaching so much as heading up a user group mm-hmm. of Cognos users so that, as Steve said, make people more independent, and that frees us up instead of saying how many left-handers in zip code 13031 got shelter payments last month. They can look that up themselves. They can, you know, design their own query with clicks, basically. That saves us a lot of, you know, tedious work from our standpoint.
Well, this actually helps me quite a bit in thinking of pedagogy. This course is part of a three-course sequence. The first one is entitled Social Welfare, and it's an overview of social welfare programs, Medicaid, you know, TANF, you know, nationally and historically. Then the second one is Human Services Caseload Management, which focuses on, you know, general introduction to human services, but also this database construction throughout. They'll do an internship linked with that, and they'll build a database that reflects the needs of that internship site. Whether or not the internship site decides to use it or not, it's a different matter. But they do build it in Access, which makes it available. You know, it's a software application that we all have. But it gives them an introduction to the basic, principles. And then there's a third course, which is program evaluation and policy analysis, where they focus on creating logic models for programs and then developing, budget, flexible budget spreadsheets and program evaluation plans, and using the ArcGIS geographic mapping software. In those sort of, that the progression, are there things that you think we should add to that curriculum or take away? Things that wouldn't be, that would be useful, that you'd wish that students who are, by and large, looking for careers in human services would find helpful, things to add?
Well, I mean, just my particular angle on it is going to be the system stuff. That, don't come in and think that you need to invent all this data. There's data. You know, what you need to do is have the ability to get at it. They would, if they're going to do an internship in New York, all the counties are the same, basically. Many of them, not all of them, but many of them have these SOS servers, for instance. So that's something they really would want to be aware of. There's also the ability to take any report. The part of WMS is part of what it does is send reports down to a local server, which we then print or not if we choose. Those report files can all be turned into data as well, and we do that, and we make extensive use of that, where they don't really have a data source that was intended as a data source, but they send us a report. And we just take that and make a database out of it. So they need to look around because there's data lying on the ground. I mean, don't make a database. Don't expect people to key something in. Because they're going to say, I keyed this in yesterday. Why would I key it in today? You know.
So ways of interfacing.
Get the data. Don't
importing.
Key the data.
Right.
You know, it's out there.
And when you talk about analyzing the data, you're talking about making cross tabulations or regression analyses or correlations or more summary reports, total counts. And
summary reports or cross tabs. I don't know if we've ever done statistical, beyond literally counting how many. But
I mean, most of what we use this for is really to identify a subset of cases that either need work on them or there's something wrong with them. I mean, one of the great things is with this data is to go in and look and be able to look at and say, okay, I know that a case, if it's this and this, it's not right. So how many cases are like that? So we can do that query to find out those cases that says that. Let's see if I can come up with something here that I do. Well, one of the things we do, we look at to see if there's a potential for duplicate food stamp benefits at the end of the month. So we go in and look to see, are there any cases out there that have overlapping payment lines because one was issued, same individuals, but one was issued on a food stamp case and one was issued on a TA case. So we go in and look at that, and we find 6 or 8 a month that we're able, because we found out that over time that we were having duplicate food stamp issuances, and here are some of the reasons why. So now we can take this data and go in and look at that at the end of the month and prevent that from happening. Or the state says that anybody who is, and the state has edits on the data that we put in. So there's one thing that's called a TASA code. I don't know what it stands for anymore. But it basically indicates that an individual who is under 19, I think, has to have a code, and it's either pregnant, parenting, or a non-parent. I know, so everybody's got one of those codes if they're under 19. Well, what we found over time, because there's no link, is that you'd have somebody that was pregnant who would then have the child, and they'd still be pregnant. So the state would come in and do an audit and say, you're wrong.
Right.
Okay, so we'd start, okay, well, we got a query now that says, look at all the unborns. Look at all the cases that say two for pregnant. And do you have an unborn in that case?
Right.
No unborn in that case, then the code's wrong, probably. So you get a report that says these are probably wrong. Right. So we number do things like that. So it's so an individual, I think, it's being able to see that there's problems or see that there's an issue and say, how can I use the data to find out that, because if it happened to me, it happened to 5 other people. So how can we reduce our, whether it's payment errors or just case errors or whatever?
And that would be errors where you need to do a recoupment, right?
Or well, it could be. Or it could just be something where the state's going to write us up at some point in time and say, hey, you know.
Yeah, there's no benefit about that code. I mean, the client doesn't benefit from being encoded.
Right. But the state does come in and do an audit on it. So it's just...
They just want to count how many people are pregnant, and if we're not doing it right, then they get a bad count.
Yeah. Right. So the state dictates programs, but they don't dictate how to manage your data.
Well, they do to some extent, because they have some edits on those on some of those fields that say you can't do this. But there's other fields that are really unedited. And so... For example, in those, if you're under 19, you got to have a code. That's all they're editing.
But it doesn't have to make any sense.
Right. So it's got to be a 1 or 2 or a 3, but it doesn't have to be right. As long as you got a code in there, it passes the WMS edit.
Right.
But now we have to use this data on the back end to say, is it right or not?
Gotcha.
So it's doing those type of things because those are the type of tedious things that workers don't have time to do. You're busy... You're not going to be looking at these little codes over here.
Right.
Mostly what you're looking at are changes. And you're not looking at the thing that hasn't changed. So
and you're also, there's no penalty.
Right.
There's no phone call. You don't. No client's going to call up and say, hey, you got my pregnant parenting code. You know, they're going to call up if their check didn't get there. It's not a check anymore, but...
And then the other thing, they're not going to call up and tell you, geez, I got too many benefits. I got double the benefits. Yeah. Some of them do, but not all the time.
No, the 1996, they had a welfare, the TANF reform, right? Did that change your database requirements? Because that had a whole sort of work, welfare.
Yeah, it didn't change our local so much. It changed the state because they had to start collecting all kinds of information for the federal government that they didn't have to before. The biggest change I can think of right off the top of my head, if you had an individual who was applying for a child that wasn't theirs. Grandma's applying for Johnny. Johnny's mom skipped town or whatever. So grandma comes in and applies for Johnny. In those days, grandma would be the case name, and case names are not...
They're like part of the address.
Yeah, they're not really part of... There's no individual data on that person. So Grandma Smith is there. Johnny's down here, and Johnny's officially on. So if I put in grandma's name, I'm not going to find grandma. But if I put in Johnny's name, I'm going to find Johnny. Some of the information we had to start collecting now was grandma. All the information of everybody in that household. So now all of a sudden, grandma, instead of just being a case name, grandma's actually listed now as an individual. She's listed as a not an active individual. We got all her information on there. We got her social security number, and we've given her her client ID number and everything like that. So that was a change.
And that's to report to the federal government.
Yep.
I've seen on their website they have sort of all these aggregate numbers
And we had to start keeping counts, which, by the way, are up to date on SOS now.
Oh, good.
The 60-month and 24-month counts. You can only be in so many months, which in New York isn't really true, but you still have to count.
Well, you got to switch over.
You change funding.
Yeah. Right, and yeah. It goes from 50, 25, 25 to 50, 50, something like that.
Yeah. At least for another month or so.
Yeah,
no, the governor, the state budget proposed screwing us, the locals. It was instead of being 50-50, it was going to be
52-48.
Yeah, 52-48, and it was going to be
nickel and dime.
Yeah, and instead of 50-25-25, it was going to be 50-27-23 or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So, I think the counties were too happy.
So do you think it's going to pass? Or
I don't know. I hope not.
Just Elliot's budget. Yeah. It's already got a couple of strikes against it.
Yeah. Fair hearings, is that something you have to keep track of? Fair hearings?
We don't. I mean, the state keeps track of
it. Yeah, but you don't have to sort of. There's no requirement. Something I heard was with the 1996 reform that was no longer required.
I don't know,
but it's another data thing. So you don't do any.
No, we don't.
We used to have a little database that we did. I imagine they still have something up there now, but
with their own internal.
Yeah.
We don't.
But the state has, if they need a hearing decision, they can request it from the state and get all the records.
Great.
If you want a demo, it just so happens that we set up to do a demo earlier, and the stuff is still up there, so we can do it on a screen.
Sure, that would be really super. The more I see, the more relevant I can make their coursework and things like that. All right, great. Yeah. Thanks.
There's going to be names up here. I mean,
I'm not going to look at those. So right, 40.
So you just search, by one another.
Mm-hmm.
There's you can search different ways.
This is all created in a similar way that you create a form and an access.
Yeah, I guess. I really don't use access enough to say, but it's an object-oriented development language. Mm-hmm. These are all controls with events and properties.
Gotcha.
So you decide how you want to search. And, somebody calls up, this is, they either know their case number, their name, or something. So you just get all these people. And this is primarily information that came from WMS that has been entered up through yesterday. WMS is a batch system, so each night there's an update. When the data passes on the edits, we get it back overnight. First thing in the morning, we update the tables that are behind this.
So do you manually copy and paste the data, or do you run a macro of
there's programs that it would be a lot of data to copy and paste. We get typically a few thousand transactions a day.
Okay.
So it's kind of industrial strength. Mm-hmm. And we have individuals. This case only has one individual. And these are all just things that mean stuff to workers that mean anything to you. This person doesn't have any ID backs. Actually, I don't find anyone who has any back. There's somebody's. And a birth certificate.
Oh, okay, these are things to prove eligibility required for them.
So this just shows, this is a picture of the...
And this is the imaging technology you were talking about?
This is just a little homegrown imaging thing.
People put it through a scanner, and it goes...
Yeah, I mean, they submit it up to the record area, and that's where it's done.
And they scan it and add it to the case.
And it's just indexed.
Do you find that helps having the digital? Does that save storage space and...
Mainly what it does is it saves us having to bother people for stuff. Once we have it once, the same people tend to come in again and again and for different cases. It's the space involved, I don't know. We've got maybe 300,000 images in here. I don't know how much space... filing space, it's really saving.
Yeah.
It's not much. I mean, we have, our record center has more shelf space than the public library.
Really?
It's pretty bad. Uh-huh. It's you know, a couple floors of a warehouse. So the amount of space this is saving is that it's more easy access and not hassle and clients.
Gotcha.
Well, we hope someday, and not that too distant future, but next year or two, to have a more robust imaging system, hopefully.
More comprehensive.
And,
but as of right now, all we keep are the, what we call the permanent stuff. The this birth certificate is always going to be this person's birth certificate. We're not keeping rent receipts. Transient kind of stuff.
Permanent,
There's a number of different marriage licenses and social security cards. So the permanent documents that, about a person's identity. So it's called ID docs.
Which, I was interviewing someone, and they said it was really hard to process people who had lost their wallet, homeless people who had lost their wallets. And
where do you start?
Yeah, I'm not sure this actually helps with that, because how do you prove it is that person? But
there is a finger imaging function that isn't tied into this at all. I mean, I don't
know. Tied into anything.
Yeah, it doesn't. You can't use it to identify somebody. It only will tell you.
You're going to identify somebody.
If you don't know who they are and they just put their finger on there, it'll tell
you. If they're in the system, it'll pop up.
And that was part of the mandate. Is that a New York State mandate? Or is that
New York State?
New York State, Turkey Lombardi mandate.
Okay.
You're probably too young to know Turkey Lombardi.
No, I don't know personally.
He was an icon around here. He was a state senator who inflicted all sorts of things on us.
Really?
Finger imaging.
To avoid fraud type of a thing.
Considering how much money was spent on the system and how it's obviously tough to prove how much money was saved since you're avoiding fraud. With all the other stuff, I don't think that we saved 1/10, 1/100th of the system cost just because it's pretty tough to.
We got three people working down there. If nothing else. Just that cost, let alone the technology.
Now, does this tie into, I remember with the 1996 Act, there's an interstate monitoring requirement such that if you get 5 years total, has that been a database thing? I've also heard that nobody's doing anything about it.
That's not true. The state does. The state keeps track of that.
Not perfect, undoubtedly, because it's not always easy to tell when you get the same person.
Oh, so there is monitoring to see if people are going toward that 5 years.
It's supposed to be a federal
repository. I don't know if that works, but the state does. The state does do it. And we get inquiries every once in a while from them.
From other? Does this have a relational view where you can actually show how all the tables are related? Like one-to-one and one-to-many type of thing? And so all these subforms here, like the case information, individual data, you know, how those are related to the main form type of thing. Does it have that type of function?
Well, I can't really show it to you here. I mean, I could devise such a thing.
But it doesn't have a window or view that does that.
I mean, you can do it, but I don't use persistent relations anyway, so it wouldn't look like that.
Okay.
I do my relations on the fly.
Okay.
I build them when I need them. And I tend to use SQL queries rather than these persistent relations. So it wouldn't really look. I know what you mean with the lines going from here.
Yeah, like the ER diagram type of thing that they teach in textbooks.
It wouldn't, it wouldn't really look like that. But I mean, I can give you logically.
Right.
I could tell you what it is, but I don't have anything that.
So each of these tables, I mean, these are each of these subforms are tied to each other through a query that's written in standard query language.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's views, data views. But yeah, it's an SQL select statement.
Is it possible to see what that, just from my own understanding, what a statement looks like? Can you pull that up on this?
Not from here, because this computer doesn't have the development language on it.
Oh, okay. So you can't see any of the behind-the-scenes coding on this.
Right.
This is a sort of an end user.
This is an end user thing. Gotcha. I mean, I can show you that, you know, there's lots of code. But it's not something I can show you right at this point.
I'm just asking because I'm one of the people who, as you described earlier, you know, they get hooked on them,
mm-hmm.
and then you're just interested in how people do it. With
yeah.
I've never used Fox Pro, and so
there's all different ways, and this embodies a lot of different mm-hmm. techniques
mm-hmm.
actually. And if you're really into it, sometime
mm-hmm.
I can spend a lot of time mm-hmm. talking about literally how this thing is put together. It's mm-hmm. it's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're interested in that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a balance. I have to balance it with not taking too much of your time. But you know, for instance, I've just built a few things that look like this
mm-hmm.
for the housing authority, but they don't have the industrial capacity because they're all built in Access.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, you know, to what degree are those skills generalizable to other platforms?
I mean,
the
notion is the same, but I mean, you've got different ways to do things. A lot of what happens in here is code that's actually stored in tables. I can show you that in a little bit. This contacting, this is where the task will end up
mm-hmm.
on this screen. This person happens to have a task was assigned to them. It was assigned to W. West
mm-hmm.
as a worker, and this is, you know, the type of task it is.
Gotcha. So when someone calls in, you type in their name, and then you can pull up their information under individual information, case information.
Right.
And then when you figure out what needs to be done,
then this is where it'll end up when you assign something. Now, mm-hmm. if you go over here, what this was originally was a way for people to fill out a form, and it just brings it up in Acrobat with the data. This one used Acrobat before,
mm-hmm.
so it'll take an extra second. So see, it just fills in the data, and then you can add in the stuff that.
That's pretty neat. So these are PDF files, and if you click on that, it's you can't edit it here.
I can edit,
but
it's
here. Oh, really?
I can edit this. I can't edit this.
Yes, but it automatically takes those fields and puts them in.
Yeah, if I highlight the fields. Yeah. These are the fields, so I can say okay, like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh huh. Type your stuff.
Right. Right.
Print out and send it to them or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But this is data that was in that.
Right.
In here.
That's pretty neat.
These are all actually records in a table, and the code to create that PDF mm-hmm. is a field in that table. There's like a program
mm-hmm.
in the table.
Okay.
So what I say is, you know, if you do this and you double-click it, it says go to the memo field that's on this record right here and find the code that's in that memo field and execute it as a program.
Okay.
And what it does is then put together a bunch of data from the various views
uh-huh.
to create the variables that appear on that form
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then execute the form with the variables from it.
Gotcha.
Whether you can do that in Access, I couldn't say.
Well, I think in Access, I'm trying to make the connection or the analogy, I guess. Each of these form numbers might be their own macro, where you'd say, you'd write a query, mm-hmm. you know, make a table, and then you write another query that takes something from that table and mixes it with another table, etc. And each of those is a separate query. Usually a make table query or something like that, but then the macro says do the first one, then the second, then the third, then the fourth, and it seems like all that whole thing would be just one line here. Is that?
Well, no, it's a lot of lines actually. I'm just trying to here. Let's see.
So that function where you can put fields, where you can have the data come from your database into the fields, is that a function that's put out by Adobe, or is that part of the Fox Pro?
Well,
or is that, it's probably a joint.
Yeah, it's. I'm trying to. That's what you have to create. I use Fox Pro to write out this file.
Does Fox Pro have drop-down menus where then you can, you don't have to learn the actual script. You can hit paste and it'll paste the script, or you have to learn.
You wouldn't. I mean, this is Adobe told me what this had to be, not Fox Pro.
So you copied and pasted the code that they sent you.
Basically. I mean, but I have to write out. This is the name of the field on the form,
right?
And then this is the data I want in that field,
right?
So I have to write. It's a function called string to file. I create a string in memory, and then I have to write it out to a file. And then I have to execute the file. And the computer association knows that this file name, the extension is FDF.
Where's the FDF? That's what it is. That's what that.
Yeah, if you had the right
transaction
here, you know. Because this is hiding extensions.
Okay.
So now these are all PDFs.
And
then. These are FDFs.
FDFs, okay.
And FDFs are those text things, and they they send the data to a PDF that has fields in it.
Gotcha.
And what I use, the code that I wrote, takes the data from this case.
Right.
And then writes it out to this string. And then I say, do this string. And it knows to go find this PDF. That has this field and this field and this field on it.
It knows to find the PDF, but how does it know which tables to draw the data from? That's whatever's active.
Yeah, and I filled this out from those tables.
Gotcha.
So it's actually these views. And that code I can't show you here. Because I don't have the
right
tools.
Right.
That's just the one bit of it. Because it writes out those text files. And mostly they get erased, but sometimes people quit out of it. If you do this, this one will get you pick the person you want.
Gotcha.
So that press any key to continue. As soon as you press a key, it deletes that file. But sometimes people manage to get out somehow without doing that. I don't know. So those files are kind of left over there if you want to clean them up every once in a while. So anyhow, that was the place where, because what I'm doing in here, really, I said print a form using case data, but what I'm really doing is executing a little program.
Right.
So it allowed me to do some other things like this. Okay, that's just a little warning saying this is an old case. And then this is the place where you actually assign the tags.
Oh, gotcha.
And so you say, okay, this is a stamp producer. These are the tasks that are related to that super task, I guess, type of task. This is what's available. Now, if you change this to something else.
And that's where the daily person would be. Picking that first
field. Would have this.
Though, by far and away, the most tasks are not assigned by the phone person. The most tasks are assigned by the clerical staff due to paper. Either somebody drops off paper at the front desk or comes in the mail. That almost always as a task.
Gotcha.
Where on the phone, 85 to 90% of the stuff that come phone calls are handled without being tasked.
So they're questions about.
Questions, right. Or they can do some stuff right there if they have time. Right. There's just a,
they can assign it to themselves.
They can assign it to themselves. So there's a number of things. So by far and away, most of the stuff is done by clerical staff.
So this drop-down is you know, it changes depending on your choice over
Gotcha. Oh, that's interesting. I'm not sure that you can do that in Access. Because these choices here would be a separate table somewhere, and it would be your choices in the drop-down list would be a table. I don't know if you could switch it based on
this. You know, comes from a table.
Yeah.
And then this comes from a query based at, with this is the parameter in the query.
Oh, really? It's not a separate table for each of those in the under team. You have maybe what five different table, five different.
What this comes attributes. From actually is the there's a table called rotation, which is all the people.
Right.
And all the people are in a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I do is select the unique, you know, because I don't want to assign, I don't want a team with no people in it.
Right.
So I, the first thing I do is look to see, okay, of all the people who are in a team, what are the teams?
Okay.
And then that makes this happen.
Right.
So there's at least one person in the, that's active in the food
in center. The building right now.
Yeah.
So that's an initial part.
They're in the building right now, but they're in the system as
they're logged
as being
at work.
Well, they're in the system as actively a member of this team.
Oh, for instance, they might not be into it. They might be off.
Right.
Well,
so we could
take them out temporarily.
We can take them out too. But for instance, a daily worker is in there. If that's their job, they're in there unless they're going to be out more than 2 days. Mm-hmm. So if I have somebody who calls in sick, they don't get taken out. Gotcha. They're still there. They're still going to assign tasks to them. Now, if they say, geez, I've got pneumonia and I'm going to be out for a week, then we take them out.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So basically, that's what we're doing is in the administrative review. So there are no tasks assigned to that team.
Mm-hmm.
So that team should probably be deleted.
Gotcha.
Then each task is associated with a team.
Mm-hmm.
So if you pick this team, I say, okay, look at all the tasks that have FS Research in their team.
Right.
And that's that.
Right, right. So that's the tasks are all in one sort of table, and they have one field is the team. And so it queries it by the team. And looks it up. Okay. Mm-hmm.
This allows you, if you have the right security, apparently the person doing this is a supervisor or better that's running this right now.
Yes, John.
He can actually assign it to someone if he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Typically what you do, though, is assigned on rotation. So there's a function in there that will go in and look at the rotation table and see who's the next person up that's a member of the food stamp research team, assign it to them, and then set them as not being available until the next time around. So it's just kind of an on-off switch. It goes through the table.
Oh,
and then it just flips the switch back and forth.
Ones and zeros or something.
It's a binary of some sort. It might be AB. I don't know. True, false. I can't remember off the top of my head. And when it gets to the bottom, it just resets everybody and starts.
Okay, gotcha. Gotcha.
If you can't find any active members of the food stamp research group that are available, then it makes everybody available and goes to the top.
Yeah.
And then it creates a record in the table of assigned tasks.
Right.
And one of the nice things about the system is that if the case currently is assigned to somebody as a task, then the next time that comes in, if that task has not been completed, it assigns it to that person that originally had it.
Right. This same person, even though they're probably not up for rotation.
You mean this is if someone calls back?
Well, it could be a week later.
Right, a week later.
A week later they call up with something totally different, or it could be related. Doesn't matter. The phone person doesn't have to care what it is. They just assign it as a task, or whoever. They assign it as a task, and this looks and says, it's already assigned to somebody, so we'll assign it to that person again.
The same case, even if it's a different question.
Right.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Oh, that's... Wow. How do you program that? That's pretty...
Well, you just have to look through all the available... There's a lot of code involved.
Yeah. No, you've got to query. You've got to look to see if any of the active cases match the same.
Is there an unresolved
identify number?
An unresolved task for this case. Though.
Yeah.
That's step one.
Oh, so you've got to have a query for unresolved.
All the tasks. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's important for two reasons. One is you shouldn't have two different people working on the same case.
Right.
And two, hopefully. It's an incentive to get your tasks done so that you will get less tasks because there was somebody out there recently complained that I get more tasks than anybody. Well, she had more pending tasks than anybody.
Right.
So therefore, it was more likely that she was getting more tasks because she wasn't completing them timely, and therefore, people were calling back and it was going to her again.
Right.
John doesn't have any work assigned to him, which is not too smart. Administrative supervisor, but he can review other people's tasks. He can also create users or modify a user. So this is where you go in and say what people can do in the system. So this person can assign tasks to other people. That's their level. They can't reassign workers to different groups or anything like that. They can't go in and change stuff, except stuff that was assigned to them, which probably wouldn't have happened to begin with.
Now this isn't something I've never done, assign level of security to someone.
It's different than Windows security. Yeah. It's a functional security.
Right. And is that a lot of? That's got to be a lot of coding.
That's not actually as bad as some of them.
Because it has to take into account all the tasks, and specifically say which tasks
I'm not. We haven't gotten to that level of. It isn't like they can assign these kinds of tasks. If you can assign a task, it can assign a task. These are. All the users. Now you can't create a user here. That would be the security level thing. But you can, if you're at the right level, like supervisor or some of the clerical staff, can go in and change what team somebody's in. For instance, I'm in no team, right? Oops. So I can add myself to one of the teams. And that makes me liable to get tasks assigned to me. What this does is let them, if somebody's not in a team right now because we know somebody's out today and it's like something at one time we thought the daily people would assign things to if they were out sick. You can say, okay, he's out now, but starting tomorrow, I want him to be in the call center. So every morning I'm going to run through and say, who's got today's date? Change their team to this team so that they go, then this will move up here, basically. So it's just so that you don't get taken out of rotation temporarily and they forget ever to put you back in and you never
that
get
happened
work
to somebody who was out for out of rotation for a week and didn't bother to tell anybody.
Well, if you put it in here
you'll
get your fail safe.
This was a while ago.
So this won't automatically update shift them at that date. You have to actually search and
there's a program that runs every morning that searches.
It will. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
It runs before we open. Shoves this up to here, essentially.
Great, great.
And this is where you add your teams and your tasks and all that. Mm-hmm. And, so this is the team. That's basically what there is in the record. There's some primary key kind of stuff, but as mm-hmm. far as the meaningful data, that's what there is. And the tasks are associated with a team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How long did this take to build?
Well, I don't work all day on one thing, so it's mm-hmm. sort of hard to say, mm-hmm. In terms of hours. I mean, it was over some months that we did it. A lot mm-hmm. of it was design and just figuring out, mm-hmm. What is it they really want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we met the first time we really met. It was like in August or something like that.
Yeah, and then, but it was little. It was done in fits and starts.
Yeah, because we didn't have the phone system yet, so there was no real rush. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so,
mm-hmm. yeah, I tend to have a lot of balls in the air.
Yeah,
and this was one of them. But it wasn't everything that was near by any stretch.
That's very impressive.
Not the hardest uh-huh. thing I did or anything. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of stuff going on, but no one thing is terribly complicated.
Mm-hmm.
There's other stuff than this Medicaid thing and stuff. Mm-hmm. But partly because it was Medicaid. Mm-hmm. The customer makes a difference, too.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are just easier to work with than others. So this is the maintenance screen mm-hmm. or whatever. As I said, normally you would go in and your typical worker, all they're going to be able to do is review my tasks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're going to bring this up and it's going to show all the things that they've got assigned to them.
Mm-hmm.
Since they don't have anything assigned to them, this person probably does, I'm guessing. And these are all the things.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts out by assigning or listing it in, put the most recent thing mm-hmm. on top. Mm-hmm. This refreshes once a minute.
Okay.
So that, if somebody's got stuff assigned to them, if somebody out there is assigning stuff to me, it's going to come up at the top of my
mm-hmm.
list,
mm-hmm.
and within a minute after they assign it. You can just hover over this. You can also, if you want to, assign it by name, mm-hmm. case number, business. If you want to go in and edit it, you bring this screen up. And change the status to complete, and it fills in the date and who mm-hmm. has completed mm-hmm. it, and so mm-hmm. on. You can put in more comments.
Mm-hmm.
And everything you do here is then ported back over to that 3.9 screen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that if somebody does inquiry on the case, they're going to see that something was assigned to some, there's a pending
mm-hmm.
transaction related to this case,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
a pending task, I should say. So if we go over 31B388,
didn't copy and paste?
Not all fields, but this one can. And the form I was on before, that field was actually disabled because they can't change that stuff. The worker mm-hmm. can't edit everything on the field. Oh, because I need laptop problems here. So this is a task. These are tasks that have been assigned. each task has a number associated with it. It's a new task, a completed task.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's three different possibilities. It always starts out as NT, new task. If the worker does something but doesn't complete the task, but they add something to it, then it comes PT for pending task. And then when they finally complete it, CT for complete task. Okay. And what you see here, the narration there is specific to that one line. But if you go down to create report, that will show you all the narration on the case.
Oh, so is everything that's happened for that person?
Yeah.
Ever? Or?
Yeah.
Well, since we've been recording it in this system.
And once it's entered, it can't be changed.
Okay.
So I can't go in and say, I really didn't want that, or, geez, I'd like to correct my misspelling, or whatever, it's too bad. Can't be changed.
Gotcha.
I can change it.
Well, I'm not the worker.
But that's by design. We don't want people going in and changing the fact.
Yeah, right,
you know,
right.
This is a record of what they did. Right. We don't want them, you know, two months later to realize it was a mistake and
right.
then say, I didn't really do that.
Right.
So, yeah, this mm-hmm. is basically a narration place.
Mm-hmm. And if, in fact, you as a worker decided, I've got too many tasks and I'll just complete a whole bunch of them and just go in and click complete on all of them, well, the problem with that is that there's a record. And it says who completed the task. So
and it uses your login, your system login.
So you can do that, but sooner or later somebody's gonna say, what the heck, I got these phone calls and says and I look at here and it says it's completed, but it's not completed. Well, you've got a record that you said you completed it. Even if you didn't, it says you completed it. So we never have had anything like that before.
Right. Either. Right. But there's accountability.
Yeah, it's essentially a signature. Yeah. I mean, you have to have provided your login and your password. Mm-hmm. And the computers lock after 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, unless you're an idiot, you're not going to be able to say somebody else did it, you know, unless you write your password up on your monitor or something.
People
do occasionally, but... Then they might as well just leave their credit card line too, essentially. Yeah. I mean, that is their responsibility.
Well, this has been very helpful. Thanks. I have to get to my parking meter. Did you have any questions for me?